We have a new series of Belief as Joan Bakewell meets a lineup of guests including the former US President Jimmy Carter, the actor Sir Ben Kingsley, and screenwriter Julian Fellowes. They're all in candid conversation with Joan about what they believe and why. And the series starts tomorrow.
Lord Dannatt was chief of the General Staff during critical years in the Afghanistan War. He made headlines by speaking out when he felt British troops lacked proper equipment. He was also concerned for their spiritual welfare.
I felt it was important that those being prepared for operations in Iraq and Afghanistan would be confronted by issues of life and death and needed to have something which they could hold on to, even if that something was just having been present at a regimental service before they deployed and had heard a few hymns sung rather badly and the chaplain say a few prayers.
Join me, Joan Bakewell, to hear Richard Dannatt talk about Belief this Christmas Eve at 9:25 on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's 11 o'clock, time now for Jazz Lineup with Claire Martin.
Hello and welcome everyone to our annual Christmas festive roundtable, where we're talking and listening to all things jazz. Around the highly decorated table this year is jazz legend and national treasure, Bobby Wellens. Welcome.
Thank you.
BBC Radio 3 new generation jazz artist, Trish Clues. Hello, Trish.
Thank you. Hello.
And the new director of NYJO, the National Youth Jazz Orchestra, Mark Armstrong. Nice to see you.
Thank you for having me.
And in session for us, the Ewan Stevenson Trio. Hello, Ewan.
Hi, Claire.
One man down today. What's happened to Conrad?
Yeah, we should be a quartet with Conrad Wisniewski. Unfortunately, can't be here due to a minor accident.
Oh, dear.
He's cut his finger quite badly.
Okay.
So he can't make it today.
Well, we wish him well, and your trio's here, so we're looking forward for the next 90 minutes. So we're going to put the jazz world to rights while I attack the first gluten-free mince pie that Trish has brought in. And Ewan, to get us all in the mood, what's your first tune?
We're going to play a tune arranged by Vince Guaraldi. It's called Christmas Time Is Here.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Christmas Time is here, played by Ewan Stevenson on piano, Ewan Burton on bass, and Alan Koska on drums. Lovely way to start the programme. I can't believe this year has flown by, so I say to all my guests today, Bobby, for you, how has 2012 been for you?
It's been quite good to me, actually, with the various people I've been working with. Most of them younger, well, what I call, they don't call themselves the younger element now, because there's even younger coming in. But yeah, it's been
glanced
really
quite
nice.
Glaringly at you there.
Yes, I did. Didn't he?
Mind you, I am as well, so yeah, you're in for it today. But you've had a good year, prosperous, healthy.
From my point of view, yes. Not good. Not particularly prosperous, not over prosperous, but nevertheless fun. Lots of fun.
Good. Trish?
Yeah, it's been a very fun year. That's a good word to use, I think. Lots of new things, exciting, lots to do. It's good.
But it's flown. Mark, just a minute ago, it was Valentine's night. Now here we are.
I know. And actually, it was my daughter's birthday as well, Valentine's night. So
it feels like yesterday.
Absolutely. But yeah, since then, for me, I've had some amazing things happening. I mean, particularly with Nigel.
Yes.
I mean, we made this album, which was lots of fun. But the real great standout thing, I guess, for me was conducting the prom in the summer, which was just brilliant.
I didn't know you did that. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, with
nerve-wracking.
Much, very, very nerve-wracking. It's one of those things that you don't really get so scared anymore when you've done something like that. And
yes.
it was a great experience.
A bit like women and childbirth and pain afterwards.
Indeed, yes. Yeah. And I've seen that on my wife's face three times now, so I don't know what it's like, but I can well imagine.
Well, it sounds like we've all done all right this year. Let's talk about things that have changed from a musician's point of view. Just first thing I was going to talk about is, you know, sort of social networking, online revolution that's happening for all of us. We've all got to be very socially aware of. And CDs seem to be a thing of the past. The download situation taking over. How do you feel about that, Bobby?
I think it's a shame.
You do?
Well, I do, partly because, I mean, with another hat on, one of the things that I do is I do some sort of jazz history lecturing at the RCM, and I've noticed that some of the great writing about jazz is actually in sleeve notes. Mm. A lot of the writing that you see in books is kind of a sort of hagiography. You know, it's like, yeah, and when Bird walked into this club, and, you know, it was that kind of stuff, which doesn't tell you about the music. And when you read things by people like Oren Keepnews, you know, they're really amazing, proper little kind of critical essays about what it actually sounds like. Mm. And when you download, you don't get that. At least I can't get it.
Remembering, you know, who's on it as well. You know, when you bought a CD, I was a teenager, you knew exactly who was on everything. Mm. But, you know, the minute you start, you know, you forget because you don't see their name written down.
No,
it's not easy to find the information.
I'm not involved in any of that. I don't have any IT.
You don't?
It's time I got some together, I think.
I think you might have to ask Father Christmas for a little iPad. An iPad 5 for you, Bobby Williams. But, you know, we sell CDs on gigs. It's a bit of extra money, isn't it? I mean, it's very handy.
Yeah.
People like meeting the artists, getting this signed.
Implying then that there are no royalties in downloading.
Well, there are, and sometimes it's better for the artist, so it can work for us.
I suppose the other thing is that people used to put albums together as a story, you know, and you don't get that so much if you just download an individual track.
Yeah.
And I think that the concept, I mean, I suppose that's changed with a CD that used to have an LP and it was a story with two halves,
that's
wasn't
right.
it? You had to stop and turn it over.
Yeah.
And now with a CD, I guess, you know, the idea is, I mean, you try and, at least I would imagine the idea is to try and program something that runs like a concert, whereas if you're doing individual track downloads, it's quite easy to shuffle them up in your iPad, in your iPod. And the other thing is that business of, if there's a load of segues that don't work digitally, which is really irritating when you're trying to listen to something beautiful and it kind of goes and stops for about 2 seconds and it didn't on the CD. So I think there's some way to go before that format, at least in my opinion anyway, is something that really appeals to someone who really loves music. I mean, it's great for sort of tinkly
background
stuff.
It's a music lover thing, isn't it? In the same way that LPs are still cherished by true music lovers. So I'm not sure they'll go away. But
well, mainly also because the covers were cherished as well.
Yeah.
Because the guy, the American guy who did all the Blue Note stuff, I don't personally suffer from that.
You must have email, Bobby. I mean, you must.
I don't have email.
You don't have email.
No, it's terrible, isn't it?
I'm sorry to snigger. That's terrible. Laughing at you.
You've always laughed at me, Claire Martis.
Lovingly. Well, Ewan, I think it's time we stop me teasing Bobby endlessly and tell us about the next piece of music you're going to play for us now.
This next one, it was written quite a long time ago now, about 10 years ago, and it's called Chit Chat. And it's based on the rhythm changes form. but it's in different time signatures, so it's designed to trick us. We'll try not to be tricked today.
Okay. Fantastic. That was Chit Chat, played and written by Ewan Stevenson on piano, Ewan Burton playing bass, and Alan Koska on the drums. Well, do we think, I mean, I'm very inspired by these three young guys playing this music. Is jazz safe in the hands of the new generation, Mark?
Oh, I hope so. I think so. The thing I've noticed with some of the people who are coming through Nigel is there's such a sort of massive diversity of what people are into, and they've got this amazing respect for the tradition of the music,
yep,
but they're really trying to do new things as well. And also people are getting more entrepreneurial. I guess, you know, going back to this idea of downloads and sort of maybe one of the positive sides of that is people take charge of the music, mm-hmm, in a way that, you know, this never really happened to jazz artists as much as it did to pop people, I guess, but, you know, you don't sort of throw yourself on the mercy of a label and let them kind of run your career, you know. But even less so now, people put their own records out, you know, they distribute them themselves, you know, they make their own work, and, mm, you know, yeah, people are doing this and kind of proving that contemporary and not uncompromising, but jazz, which is designed to be artistic, they're going out and trying to sell that. And I think that's really admirable, you know,
to
do that at an age when you've got time to devote to it as well.
And also to have the sort of business acumen to do it. I mean, it used to be just sort of, if you could just get on the phone and hustle a gig, and it's completely different now, isn't it? Just
absolutely.
Having to do the social networking. I mean, people flock to see you, and rightly so, Bobby Williams, but how do you... You don't tweet about your gigs then, I guess. Do you Twitter?
Well, only at home.
I mean, as I said in the introduction, you're extremely well known and highly respected. So you've got a name, but creating that name, you need to get the
momentum
going. Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I'm only fortunate because of the street cred, really. Outside of that, I suppose I wouldn't work all that much like most of the younger guys who are attempting to get some kind of cred in their playing. And there are many of them, and women in the jazz business now, which is wonderful to see, of course.
Absolutely.
And wonderful to hear. I mean, the days of waiting on the telephone to ring stopped 30 years ago.
Trish, what about you? Are you a good businesswoman? Are you a good organiser? Are you good at all that other stuff, I call it?
I think you wouldn't necessarily realise if you saw my office, but I think up in my head, I'm quite organised. I don't think I'm naturally very businessy, but I think you kind of have to learn as you go. I think if you know, for me, I really wanted to write and play my own music, and you just sort of have to do whatever it takes to make that happen. As you go. And
what about sort of the new sort of jazz boundary pushing trios like, not necessarily just trios, but bands like Trio VD and the Bad Plus and perhaps Portico Quartet? How do you feel about these sort of boundary pushing sort of experimental trios that are really challenging sort of perhaps traditional ears?
I think that if we can find some way of pulling a wider audience into effectively sort of instrumental artistic performance that isn't classical music.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I've got any problem with what it's called. You know, it's kind of good music. It's like that Ellington, the typical Ellington thing, you know, there are two kinds of music. There's good music and the other kind, you know. And I just think as long as it's great and it's played with conviction,
yeah,
it kind of doesn't matter if the people are old or young or whatever. I mean, what does matter is that we do want to have a wider audience for this music. And if there are, you know, younger people playing stuff which maybe refers to pop music. I mean, after all, jazz has always done that, hasn't it? I mean, it did. That's what standards were all about in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s. And even bebop, you know, I mean, I guess you could say that one of the reasons why bebop is the way it is because it's trying to get people to swallow a load of kind of modern improvisation by basing it on an old standard.
Yes.
It's kind of convincing maybe a sceptical audience and pulling them along. And the thing is that now, I guess, if you go to what might be regarded as a sort of regular jazz gig to an audience that wants to listen to, I suppose, kind of reasonably mainstream music, effectively what they want to listen to is bebop. And that audience back in the 1950s maybe would have been saying, oh, God, this is a bit avant-garde. I'm not sure I like this very much. I want to go out and listen to Louis Armstrong.
Yes.
Let me ask you, what's the average age of someone in Niger now? And do they all do, because often when I've talked and interviewed younger musicians, they always say, as I say actually, mum and dad love jazz, influenced by my dad's record collection. Are they getting into jazz simply through knowing someone that's introduced them to it? I mean,
it's a bit, yeah, I think you do get people who are, we have this kind of joke about some of the guys who come through, and they all seem to be fellas as well.
That's
they all
a shame.
Seem to be, well, I mean, of this kind of ilk of person.
No,
not everyone in the band.
That's okay.
No. Not all, no, definitely not. That's not the way we're going at all. But some of the fellas who come through, they do seem to be a little, shall we say, autistic in their sort of view of music and what they listen to and where they got it from. And it's got to be like this and no other way, you know. And that's, I suppose there are people like that who, you know, they just kind of emerge. I think you get a wide mixture of people. Some people are into, you know, say, traditional big band music. And maybe that's maybe as much to do with what they did when they were a kid when they started playing as much as to do with records they listened to. I mean, maybe joining like a local youth band and just enjoying playing with friends and playing exciting music.
Well, I'd like to play a track now. I'm really thrilled to play this artist because Jim Mullen, the great guitarist, introduced me to this wonderful talent that is Shirley Horn. I know Bobby and I absolutely love her.
Yes.
Washington-based singer-pianist Miles Davis's favourite, of course, my favourite. And here she is just doing her magic on Winter Wonderland.
you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight, we're happy tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird, here to stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland. In the meadow we can build a snowman, then pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, man, but you can do the job when you're in town. Later on, we'll conspire as we dream by the fire to face unafraid plans that we made, walking in a winter wonderland. Wonderland. In the meadow we can build a snowman and pretend that he's a circus clown. We'll have lots of fun with Mr. Snowman until the other kiddies knock him down. When it snows, ain't it thrilling? Though your nose gets a chilling. We'll frolic and play the Eskimo way, walking in a winter wonderland, walking in a winter wonderland, walking in a winter wonderland.
Oh, my absolute favourite, Shirley Horn with Winter Wonderland from the Jazz Plays Christmas CD. And this is the Jazz Lineup Christmas Round Table with me, Claire Martin, on BBC Radio 3 with Bobby Wellings, Trish Clues, Mark Armstrong, the new director of the National Youth Jazz Orchestra and the Ewan Stevenson Trio. So, Mark, it must have been quite a daunting task taking over from Bill Ashton, who founded Nijo in 1965 before any of us were born.
Yeah.
Big shoes to fill.
Definitely.
Daunting.
Well, it was daunting, and also because I remember being daunted as a kid in the band by, you know, everyone in the band and Bill. And so there was that side to it as well, you know. And then there was also trying to find a way of keeping the tradition of what the band does going, but also try and move the music on artistically and bring some new, you know, ideas into what we're trying to do, and maybe be slightly more sort of connected to and reflective of the wider jazz scene.
Very good. So, Trish, was this something that you auditioned for, Nijo? Was that ever on cards?
Yeah, I never actually went to Nijo when I was in London, but that was probably a lot to do with the fact that the course, the that I was studying on was just kind of really great, and I was quite involved with that. But Nigel did visit when I was growing up in Shrewsbury. They did visit a couple of times, and they had a workshop on one occasion. And I remember Josephine Davies, who's a really great saxophone player, and she was there. And I went and sat next to her, and I remember that very clearly. Aww. So, yeah.
You're from the Northeast. There's a real vibrant music and drama scene up there, wasn't there? I mean, how did you get this gig? Were there many people that were after this position?
Well, yeah. I mean, the way it worked out was that I ended up sort of being a kind of transitional MD when Bill sort of stepped back for a couple of years while we were trying to sort things out. And then it became obvious that even though it was kind of a bit of an uncomfortable situation for me, that it would be... we'd need to formalise who was going to actually be running the band, and it would be a bit of a shoo-in if I just kind of kept doing it without there being some kind of audition process. So there was, you know, I had to do an interview, and I had to take a rehearsal. There was a panel of the great and the good watching what I was doing, and I'm just really pleased to say that I got the job.
Good.
I got my job.
Congratulations. You got your job.
Back.
I'd love to be in a fly on the wall listening to the comments as you were doing your audition.
Yeah.
Were there many pipe smokers there?
There were a bit of chin scratching.
No, oh, yeah, there'd be right. That, yes.
Yes, bit of, thank you, Mr. Armstrong. We'll be in touch.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Oh, no, they're all very nice to me, actually. It was, it was a bit weird, but, you know, I'm delighted.
You're
now.
In now, proper.
Yeah. We're in now, proper. That's right.
Good.
It's official. Yeah.
So tell us about the new CD. I can see it there. It's looking.
Yeah,
I like
absolutely.
The artwork there. The change.
Well, you know, despite what we were saying before, you know, we are forging ahead with the idea of selling a physical copy of the CD.
Yes.
We've gone for a bit of a kind of prestige 1958 vibe to the cover.
Yeah, I love it.
A little bit of kind of a green. At least it looks green. I'm a bit colourblind, so
it's green.
It is green.
It's green. Yeah, it's green.
Yeah. Okay. And we're trying to reflect the mixture of music that makes up the band right now, which is that we like doing some really original compositions, and we commissioned a couple of pieces from Tim Garland, and both of those are on this album. One of which is the one we played at the prom, that was commissioned by the BBC, I should say, actually. And another one we commissioned from Tim a couple of years ago to celebrate the 45th anniversary of the band. There's some arrangements of standards, a couple by me.
Move on to that, because we're going to play... I think we're going to do your arrangement of Lady Be Good.
Oh, great. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So a piece by Julian Joseph, a couple of songs. One of them is some lyrics by Bill. And so what I've been trying to do artistically with the band is keep the best part of the tradition. So we've got this extraordinary back catalogue of music, which we want to keep the best of that going.
Great.
We want to commission new writers to write really cutting-edge stuff for us. We want to continue with asking people in the band to write stuff for us. We want to keep playing some standards, and we want to mix things up. So, you know, we're talking about an audience. Let's try and get people who like traditional in-the-pocket jazz in, and then feed them a little bit of contemporary stuff. And it's one of the pieces on this, the title track The Change, is by Chris Whiter, who's the baritone player in the band at the moment. And you know, it's a really contemporary piece. It's got lots of different grooves in it, it's got some free blowing in it, it's got all sorts of bits and pieces, and it always gets a massive cheer from the audience.
Great. That's
which
good.
Is a really, really good
and
sign.
How about vocalists? How many vocalists?
Well, we've got Emma Smith on this, who's an amazing talent.
She's
singing an arrangement I did of Feeling Good. And she's also singing a Steve Gray song with some lyrics by Bill called Summer Sundays.
She's terrific, Emma. What a great, great singer. She's a lovely girl. Well, let's hear your arrangement of Lady Be Good, taken from the new CD from Nigel, and it's called The Change. Here it is. Okay, Mark Armstrong, round of applause for you. Fantastic arrangement of Lady Be Good, taken from the Change, which is the new Nigel CD. Before we go on, I think it's time to pull a cracker.
Oh, yes.
Come on, Bobby Wellens. It's Christmas Eve tomorrow. Okay, I've got a little spinning top here. Ewan, let's talk to you. You're going to do another item with the band. How's your year been, and what's 2013 looking like for you?
I've had a great year with Conrad. It's a real shame he can't be here today.
Yeah.
But we were launching our new album called New Focus at the London Jazz Festival last month.
Brilliant.
And it's an album out in Whirlwind Recordings, and it features the Glasgow String Quartet. So string quartet and jazz quartet with harp.
Nice.
So it's a real kind of crossover project involving arrangements that I've done of both Conrad and my own compositions.
Okay.
And it really straddles the boundaries between classical music and jazz, and also a bit of Scottish folk influence in there as well.
Great, great. What are you going to play for us next?
Well, like the first Christmas tune, it's another arrangement by the Vince Guaraldi Trio.
Right.
Famous for their work on the Charlie Brown comic TV programmes. And this one's called, it's an arrangement of Little Drummer Boy.
Thank you. My Little John, played by Ewan Stevenson on the piano, Ewan Burton on bass and Alan Koska on drums. And you're listening to Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Claire Martin. And the Christmas roundtable is in full swing now. The cracker has been cracked and the pies are going down. So Trish Clues, congratulations again on becoming the Radio 3 New Generation Jazz Artist.
Thank you, Claire.
You've obviously had many interviews about it so far, but just tell us a little bit what it's meant to you and how it's unfolded so far this year. I mean, obviously you're at the round table, which is...
Sure, which is... Yeah, exactly. Honoured. Yeah, it's just been a learning experience, really. I mean, some of the things that I've done this autumn have just sort of been better than I could have possibly imagined, really, because it was really good timing for me because my second album came out in September, which was obviously going to happen anyway. So I had a tour lined up for that, which I was really looking forward to. So the whole of the summer, I was just kind of getting excited about that and all that kind of thing. And obviously, I found out a bit before everybody else.
But also, it must be fantastic for you as a new composer to be sort of validated by this massive organization saying, it's great what you do, and we want to encourage you as a writer. I mean, as a composer, who inspires you to compose?
Well, when I was growing up, I very much had a mix of... I had mainly classical music, actually, when I was growing up, because my dad was a big sort of... He's an amateur brass player and always had loads of Mahler and huge symphonic stuff going on, you know. And so I know a lot of music to the ear. I don't always know who's written it and what movement it is and all that kind of thing, because you just stick stuff on, you know, and I just absorb it all. So I kind of had all that. But then... Yeah, I was having piano lessons and I did a bit of singing. I liked singing tunes and playing the piano and making up tunes and just messing around, basically. And then I didn't really get into jazz till I was about 13. So when I started...
That's still early.
Doing that. But I mean, compared to now, you know, I mean,
I'm 13 now.
Compared to...
She looks 13.
But, you know, like what we were talking about before with Nigel, I mean, it's quite different now. I mean, what the kids have these days when they're learning jazz, it's much earlier and there's a lot more access. It's just completely
different.
So
what was the first thing you heard that made you think, yeah, saxophone and that style?
It was a live gig, actually. It was an amateur big band, but run by an ex-trumpet player, actually. He started running the local big band. And so my dad went and played along because they were mates and...
That was it. You caught the bug.
Yeah. So then, it was a hobby, and I just gradually got more and more into it. Mm. And it just so everything was a bit of a mix. So I was kind of writing a bit anyway, and I was learning to improvise.
But when did the saxophone come in? You said piano. I mean, I'm keen to know when you first picked up the saxophone. Was it at school? And are schools, you know, providing saxophones for children to try? I mean, at grassroots level, are young girls encouraged to pick up the sax?
I think we've maybe touched on this before. Because I grew up in Shropshire, there wasn't really much of anything going on compared to what it's like in London. You know, now when I see what kids have growing up here, the exposure they have is very different. So it wasn't ever really like that for me. It wasn't really a boy or girl thing. It was just, I just fancied kind of doing it. And I kind of had lessons out of school.
Right.
I mean, there was a music service which I was involved in. I did all the weekend things, you know, I went and did the concert band and blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't actually until this same guy, Ken King, this trumpet player, who started up a youth version of a big band.
Great.
Which was quite, you know, that was maybe when I was sort of 17. So I was very much into it by then. Anyway.
Why the saxophone then? What attracted you to the saxophone?
It was just the sound, I think. Yeah. It was a tenor. In fact, I think it was In a Sentimental Mood. It was a tenor feature. And I just thought it was brilliant. You know,
Does this all sound familiar to you, Mark? The way Trish is describing her sort of...
I think it's really nice when it's serendipitous. It's, you know, going back to something we were saying before, you know, there are some people who, you know, are somehow they are into Frank Sinatra from an age when really they ought not to have heard of Frank Sinatra or know even anything about it, but somehow they are, you know, and that's brilliant. And, you know, who wouldn't be into Nelson Riddle and Billy May as an arranger? You know, that's just absolutely fantastic. But, I mean, I think a lot of people... They hear something, and it's just something that stays with them. They go, oh, wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, and it could be in a sentimental mood. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, when I must have been about six, at my primary school, one of the teachers was leaving, and I'm pretty sure they played something that was a big band chart. on as her music that she liked. I remember the headmistress saying, "Yes, we're going to play some of her favourite music," slightly disapprovingly, you know. And I don't actually remember what it sounds like. I kid you not, I remember it, what it looked like, and it looked all sort of bright and gold and brass and silvery in colour. I don't remember what it sounds like, but I've got a vague memory of it sort of being something, oh, I want to know what that is. And I think this is one of the things that's really nice about a serendipitous education, which a lot of people don't get.
What about you, Bobby? I mean, what was your moment? Oh, I mean, obviously,
I have to say, I mean, it was in the blood. My mum was a singer.
Right.
My dad was in the band.
Yeah.
And she was a lovely singer. Great voice. 92, dementia, didn't know who you were, but as soon as my sister said, "Do you know this tune?" You know,
she'd sing it.
She would sing, yeah, and it was words, lyrics, everything, no falter in the voice. It's absolutely
brilliant.
Amazing stuff. Yeah. So born to it.
Born to it.
Rather like yourself, young woman.
Rather like myself. My mum played Ella all the time.
Yeah.
So you're now, I mean, also this year, you didn't mention, but I'll mention for you, you became a festival organiser. You put together the emulsion thing, which
that
is
was this year. Yeah.
You crammed that in as well. Tell us a bit about that before we hear you play.
Well, the name came later, but I wanted to bring in this festival together those kinds of things and also other composers and performers who I felt did a really good job of bringing those things in the mix. So I don't mean it wasn't about sort of saying, oh, this is how it should be done, you know, it was just our own
lovely
kind of way of doing it, and just people that I'd, you know, got a relationship with already. So Ian Ballamy, I had got into his playing when I was into the saxophone as a hobby, and my teacher had put on Lee Tube's recordings, and I'd got into All Men Are Men and all those kinds
that.
Of things.
Great cover.
Just the most incredible album.
Yeah.
And then I'd gone to have a lesson with him before I studied, and then I had lessons with him while I studied, and then I've since kind of worked with him and things like that. So that was a massive connection that's kind of ongoing. And then Luke Stiles, who is the contemporary classical composer involved, was a couple of years ahead of me when I was studying at the Royal Academy of Music. We all had kind of the same friends, and I think he'd done a lot of jazz bass in the past, so even though he was a kind of classical inverted commas composer, we had loads of interesting chats about music, and just like you do, you know, when you're kind of studying.
Right, it sounds like you got all your friends together and people inspired you.
Basically,
it
was just a very organic kind of thing, and then emulsion just seemed like a good word to sum up, you know, because it's kind of, I guess, crudely put, jazz and classical kind of stuff put together as separate entities or together and making something new and interesting.
Well, I've talked to you about your composing before, and you told me that this tune you're about to play just sort of came to you while he was washing up.
Yeah,
so the inspiration was to never admit to washing up.
So I must try that.
Let's, if you wouldn't mind, try it, Bobby. Go. If you could just make your way through those jazz patio doors and get your saxophone, and we're going to hear that tune from the album And in the Nighttime She Was There, and it's called Little Tune. Thank you. Little tune played by its composer Trish Clues with the Ewan Stevenson Trio, and that track appears on her current album And in the Nighttime She Is There, which is out on Basho Records. What a treat.
Lovely.
Enjoy that, Bobby?
Beautiful. Yes, I loved it.
Good.
Lovely.
Well, we were talking earlier about old clubs and new clubs, and you were discussing a new venue that I hadn't heard of. What do you think about the scene? Do you think there are some new venues opening up for people to play?
I'm not very experienced on new venues. What I do know is that people are screaming for more venues so that we can work.
Yeah.
I mean, in the 60s, we were working 7 nights a week and being paid.
Mm.
Sometimes 7 afternoons as well, because there's a guy called Jimmy Humphreys phoned me up and he said, I just wanted drums and saxophone for the strippers. It's and I was about to say, I'm sorry, and he said, £100 an afternoon each, and I said, when do you want us to start? So we used to do this, you see. So it was all that bit, which was great. And then in the evening, Ronnie's. The contrast was wonderful. But we did work a great deal in those days.
Yeah. There doesn't seem to be, there's so many great musicians coming up from the colleges, people coming out with jazz degrees now, and there are really not many. It's not like New York, is it, when you get the Time Out New York and you go, wow, there's 30, 40 clubs.
Yeah.
I don't think there is in London, and I think, or even, you know, in England.
I don't know if it's any different for the younger guys, though, in New York. Like, I think, I remember when I visited there a few years ago, they were still saying, like, whether it was the young guys or the older guys, they still have to come over to Europe to really
They can't
kind of
break through in New York.
Yeah.
The circuit is very difficult. You have to be a big name.
And there's no health insurance or anything, so they're constantly battling.
And
you
Europe's quite difficult as well. You know, I mean, I remember speaking to Clark Terry, and he was saying, you know, he said, you guys, I'm sitting in Italy with these promoters, and you guys are like a million, they know who you are, but you're like a million miles away. They never consider you for gigs in Europe. I mean, we've done very few. I don't know if it's, has it changed, do you think?
I don't think so, no. I mean,
I wonder why.
I suppose the problem, I guess, is that a lot of Europeans still view America as being the home of jazz, and so maybe they just think that we're a kind of offshoot, and why not go for the real deal? And which is obviously tremendously frustrating for.
I mean, I guess if someone said to me, like my British player heroes, you know, how do they earn their income now? I mean, it's still kind of tough
you mean
for
like
them.
Me being a millionaire.
To,
you mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, well, think nothing of it.
I think one of the things that's interesting is that we're all in that boat, aren't we?
Yeah.
I suppose one of the interesting things is a lot of really great players who maybe would have been playing all the time, say 20 years ago, you know, now they're playing quite a lot but doing some teaching. And so therefore there is a sort of, it's not an industry exactly, I guess, but there's an awful lot of jazz education out there, and there's an awful lot of people coming through that jazz education having been told exactly what they need to know to play really well by some great teachers who are also very, very great performers.
Which is like the classical music situation. Yes. But, I mean, that kid...
That's the cycle, though, isn't it? And then those people can't get gigs and they become teachers, and then it just goes on and on. It's just a wheel.
But I'd be interested to know if, when it comes... Because I think there's a difference between going through college and becoming a really good instrumentalist, like some very wise person said to me once, it's what you're doing in your 30s and beyond that you should be thinking about or worrying about, you know. So I think it's once you've got through college, so yeah, you've got your, because I mean, look at all the classical players. I mean, they're under this kind of, they're in competition with each other, you know, from age 5 pretty much. You know, it's kind of crazy, yes. But it's like, yes, so jazz will probably end up like that. It's just that it's only just happening. You know, I would wonder, in the same way that with the classical guys, you know, it's when they get into their 30s, like, who are the interesting musicians who are still, who are the people that love it so much?
Well, let's talk, well, here's somebody sitting next to you now who's, you know...
Still in my 30s.
He's still in his 30s.
Yeah.
And we were talking about reinventing yourself and always pushing boundaries. You are always on the edge of improvisation. You're cutting edge. You are the one. Mm. You are. And we were talking about your... We'll go on to your new record because... Here you are with the wonderful Kate Williams on piano.
Oh,
I mean, how did this come about? And tell us about the album and this new Bobby
Well,
Williams
I'm very
situation.
Fortunate that I get invited by people to go and do things with them. And Kate invited me to work with her quartet, current quartet. And it sort of blossomed from them. But Kate is absolutely... She amazes me because she'll say, have you heard... Oh no, I must send you a recording of that, and she'll send it. The Brazilian woman piano player with Bob Brookmeyer. Have you heard that?
Haven't heard it. But
oh, it's out of this world, you know. And she sings as well, this lady. And then she'll say, do you know this? And Kate is just. And then she said, we went and did a gig to Dean Clough in Halifax, where they had the Fazioli piano, and she fell in love with that, and said. Well, I think I'd divorce Pete if you gave me the Fazioli. Pete and I were having a laugh about it the other day. But
the album...
She wanted to do the duo, yeah.
Yeah, the album Smoking Mirrors is just a duo and an absolute testament to the synergy that you both have. Let's pick a track, and if you don't mind, we'll play While We Were Young, while we're talking about all this age difference, and hear Bobby Wellens, of course, on sax and Kate Williams on piano.
Thank you.
From Smoke and Mirrors, that was While We Were Young, beautifully played by Bobby Wellens on sax and Kate Williams on the piano. Lovely, Bobby, really fantastic.
Oh, yeah, really.
So before we go to the next item played by Ewan, you're here living in the home of Jazz Lineup because we're produced from Glasgow. Here we are. What's the scene like up here now? I mean, good clubs?
Well, not, I wouldn't say there's an abundance of clubs, but there's certainly a lot of very talented musicians coming up through the ranks, and there are still some great places to play. In fact, Ewan, who's playing bass today, he has been involved for some years in a place called the 78 Club.
Well, it's a pub. Sounds good.
But, they have great jazz there on Sunday evenings. And as well, there's other places popping up, a place called Slouch Jazz, which occurs on a Tuesday night. So again, it's normally depends on, you know, people promoting these events themselves, you know. And
it's great that jazz lovers do, you know, take a risk and create these clubs. There's where I'm from, Brighton, there's the Verdict, which is doing really well. And I just got stuck in the traffic the other day and looked across and Brighton's got a Blue Note, Brighton's Blue Note Jazz Club.
Fantastic.
This, I mean, I haven't been in there yet, but I mean, I went, yay, great, you know, to just... So it's true. It's the determination of jazz lovers throughout the land.
To be honest, it's more... know, musicians themselves going into venues and pubs and places and trying to organise it, creating an evening.
Absolutely.
And that's how it seems to sort of survive.
Yes.
So it's Christmas Eve tomorrow, 2013, upon us before we know it. Let's talk about the highlights for next year for you. What are you looking forward to, Mark?
I'm looking forward to doing the Gateshead International Jazz Festival with Nigel. We've got some fantastic guest artists. We've got Leanne Carroll and Mark Nightingale confirmed so far, so that's going to be great. On a personal note, I'm really looking forward to recording an album with Stan Tracy in the Inner Quintet with Simon Allen and Clark and Andy Kleindert. So that's going to be a great start to the year for me.
You're sorted, aren't you? That's lovely. And Bobby, you said you were busy in January with sort of raised eyebrows like you're not normally aren't.
No, I'm not. January, February is usually very quiet, a quiet period for me. But there are a few things going on. But my great friend Alan Plater, bless him, who's not with us anymore, said, don't ever tell anybody what you're thinking because they'll have it out within 24 hours. So projects in mind, yes.
Good. And of course, promoting the record with Kate Winslet.
We will, yes. Yeah. Well, we've had some good reviews.
And rightly so. Trish, as you enter the sort of, I guess, real proper year of becoming the new generation jazz artist, what's up your sleeve?
I've got a couple of nice things in January. I think I'm going to make a little appearance on In Tune, which will be nice, followed by a gig at the Pizza Express on the 22nd of January, which is Tuesday night, so it's not going to ruin
night.
Not going to ruin your Saturday night partying. But it's with the whole nonet from the album, and there aren't many opportunities for us jazzers to do such elaborate things. So I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah, so a few bit of new music to mix in with existing stuff.
No, good luck.
Very exciting.
My wish for next year is it would just be that there was some more jazz on television. I think it's great we're doing this, you know, Jazz Lineup's really in its 13th year next year. But on the television, it would help, wouldn't it? Would help us promote this music.
Well, I mean, I was really, really pleased that they televised the Nigel prom. And that was great, and it was a really great experience for the guys in the band. You can enjoy it on so many different levels, like everything else, you know, like great food, like classical music, you know.
There's enough food programmes to last a lifetime on television at the moment, is it just goes on and on, you know, not interested
in
cakes.
Making it up.
Yeah, I mean...
The Charlie Watts, when we did the rehearsals at Ronnie's before going to America... And they televised it, of course, being a Stone.
Sure.
And but they never put the lights up. They were just getting cameras without the lights up.
Mm.
Of course, when the lights went up to actually do the take, they all looked and they said, "My God, Dad's Army." Very flattering.
Well, Well, let's go to back to Ewan and Alan, our trio, through the jazz patio doors, and they're going to do a segue to pieces, again, originals by Ewan Stevenson for Prolific Writing in 2012. The first tune is called Music for a Northern Mining Town, and that will segue seamlessly into Leonard's Lament.
Thank you.
Music for a northern mining town, which segued into Leonard's Lament, and that was Ewan Stevenson's trio with Ewan Burton on bass and Alan Kosker on drums. Well, guys, the last question for this wonderful Christmas roundtable. You've all been thrilling, entertaining and thoroughly knowledgeable. Is the music still exciting, Mark, or are we all playing it safe?
I don't think people are playing it safe. I mean, my feeling is that people are accused of playing it safe when what they're doing is they're playing really intensely, but within a style which is possibly sometimes regarded as old-fashioned, when it isn't necessarily old-fashioned.
Why are you looking at me?
I'm not looking at you, Bobby. I happen to be glancing in this part, over my shoulder, and that was definitely not a reference to your good self, of course.
He never plays it safe. Yeah, he should play it more safe.
Absolutely.
You talk to his wife.
I don't think everyone, you know, goes for it, and it's just that people do it in different styles, and it's, you know, playing with real passion and intensity isn't just about creating a new sort of eclectic way of, you know, what of describing something which is improvised music. You know, you can play in the pocket and just play really intensely in the pocket too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gobby, what about you? Playing it safe? Still exciting?
I can only describe myself as excitingly safe. No, I have to say, listening to you playing is fascinating. It's lovely the way you run around and still keep everything together. Mm. Now, that's going out a bit, isn't it? It's quite interesting, very interesting. Most of the younger players have this capacity. If there was ever an observation to be made, never a criticism. No, I don't believe in criticisms. If there's an observation to be made with the younger ones that you were saying push the boundaries, if they would push the boundaries and give it a little less playing time, and then maybe stick a standard in here and there,
a bit more melody.
Or a Latin and something, and put the programme around, and then whack in something that's far more adventurous, I think you might get an audience to take that on.
Yeah.
Trish?
Well, when I play, whatever it is that I'm playing, whether it's a standard or something crazy that I've written or something that someone else has written, I just try to play something that means something, and I try to actually improvise and do something that's exciting. Very honest and exciting. Mm. And so sometimes, inevitably, it's going to work and sometimes it's not. It's not. But that's what I strive to do when I play. As a listener, if you're willing to sit there and let the music unfold for you and be maybe a bit more patient than if you were to go and listen to something that was a bit more hit you between the eyes, then, you know, there's plenty of excitement to be had.
And also, if we're allowed to ask the presenter, how do you feel about it?
Mm. Oh, I'm very guilty if I read the room, and sometimes I know that things, I might choose safe material because I have to sometimes change the set if I think that funkier stuff's going down because it's a younger crowd.
I think that's the mark of the real artist.
Absolutely.
And also, have another mince pie for that, because that's such a lovely thing to do. Don't eat mince pies. But playing it safe, I mean, is, you know, that you can do the gig too. Of course we all want it to be exciting, and of course, you know, we're hoping that jazz will always be. You go to a jazz gig, you're never going to hear that again. That's a one-night thing. That improvisation is never going to be. That is so exciting to me. I don't get why people don't think that's utterly thrilling, that they will never see that gig again. It's a one-off. That's what gets me going.
I think also, if you're reading the room and, you know, you're choosing material that's appropriate to your audience, that's just being professional. Within that context,
sometimes
though,
I feel like I'm playing it a bit safe. But,
you know, within that context, you can absolutely, you know, play the hell out of that tune. You know, and really kind of do it justice and raise the game, you know.
And always work with people that are better than you. My trio are really exciting. I mean, Gareth Williams, Lawrence Cuttle. Ooh. I mean, you know, you can't get much more fun. So I'm very lucky. Well, thank you all for coming in today and enjoying our festive fare. Thanks to Bobby Wellins, to Trish Clues, Mark Armstrong, Ewan Stevenson Trio, who are Ewan Stevenson on the piano, Ewan Burton on the bass, and the wonderful Alan Kosker on drums. I'll be with you next week for a concert from Neil Cowley with strings recorded at the London Jazz Festival, which is our take on the New Year's Day concert from Vienna. Till then, from me, Claire Martin, have a very happy and jazz-packed Christmas as the Ewan Stevenson Trio play us out with his arrangement of Silent Night. Happy Christmas, everyone, and cheers!
Merry
cheers!
Christmas.
Merry Christmas! Hooray!
Hello and welcome from me, Jonathan Swain. This is Through the Night here on BBC Radio 3, and for this first couple of hours plus tonight, an opera based on Gogol's story, Christmas Eve. Tchaikovsky thought that Tsarina's Slippers was his finest opera. Well, a chance now to judge for yourself. This is a performance of it from our own Royal Opera House in December 2009, conducted by Alexander Polyanichko. The fantastical tale tells of a willful Ukrainian girl, Oksana, sung here by soprano Olga Guryakova, who agrees to marry her blacksmith boyfriend, Vakula, that's tenor Vyacheslav Grivnov, if he can get her some of Catherine the Great's slippers. So Vakula forces into his service a not very threatening and none too intelligent devil, bass Maxim Mikhailov, and he, the devil, is one of several would-be lovers of Vakula's mother, Soloka, that's mezzo Larisa Dedkova. She's a witch. And we'll hear the first two acts now, this first of them opening with Soloka on her roof, enjoying the night and enjoying a visit from her devil.
Thank you. Раздорила, растормошила, разобрала. забылчим и спеклая суматохись на пробрался. Сын этой ведьмы, кузнец Вакула, мне назови, мою фигуру наболевал, да так проклятый наболевал мою фигуру, что Ринда чертика хочу стуру. Чтоб я такую спустил обиду, нет, погодите, кузнец проклятый, попробуй сунься, одну без матьки застать Оксану, так я сейчас же украду месяц, чтоб духи ветра, торвавшись цепи, метаться стали и налетали сугробы снегу. Чух не решится в такую вьюгу идти грубу на варенуху, а на воде двадцать тебя от точки, да так-то славно тебе храбро пересчитает, а отдумасит великолепно.
Time!